Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 10th of November, 2020, and quite an earthquake, quite a jolt to markets yesterday with this news crossing the wires that Pfizer is apparently the first to offer some kind of very promising results, according to some of its trials on its vaccine, where 90% of those in the vaccine test group were or 90% fewer cases of symptomatic COVID-19 relative to the placebo group. So very significant development, and it's being seen. I obviously have no ability to assess the promise here, but many corners saying this is really some promising results. If that holds up at 90% level, that would be almost the best case you could imagine. Many were suggesting we would only be on the order of a 60 or 70% success rate. I want to get to the market reaction, which is a really fascinating story, and we have Peter Garnry here on equities and Ola Hansen on commodities, but just wanted to run down a couple things on the Pfizer thing and some of this sort of the reaction, and then the a bit of caution afterwards has to do with a few things. First of all, this vaccine requires that it has to be stored at minus 70 to minus 80 degrees centigrade to be able to stay fresh for any serious significant length of time. It can do 5 days only at a normal refrigeration temperature range. There are side effects that are not nice, but it's maybe slightly worse than a flu vaccination, apparently. And the timeline is quite interesting as well. So if everything goes according to plan and they don't have any adverse reactions, they need to wait a bit longer on that front. They're talking about the third week of November when some sort of emergency use authorization could be filed for. So they could actually start to inoculate, for example, healthcare workers and vulnerable parts of the population. They estimate they could do 50 million doses by the end of the year. Of course, given that temperature requirement, the delivery of those could be a logistical issue. And then something on the order of 1. Something billion by the end of 2021. As of yesterday, or an article I read yesterday anyway, 39,000 have received their second dose of the shot in this trial. So and then as well, just it's not just Pfizer that has a candidate that uses this technology. It's also Moderna, mRNA, has a similar candidate. So we saw pretty strong reactions in those stocks. But I think the interesting thing here is the market reaction. And Peter, take us through why we saw the NASDAQ first celebrating, obviously with a big surge, and then ending the day sort of on the session lows, more or less. What's the mix of what's going on here?
Well, I think first of all, it was a bombshell news that hit the wires. I mean, it was a pretty big upside surprise to what had been expected to be the efficiency of the vaccine. So I think the initial jolt in the market was that, hooray, we can go back to our normal lives. A lot of the technology trades were reversed. We saw big moves in the in yields that obviously, with the higher yields, took down long duration growth stocks, which was NASDAQ. So it's a combination of, I think, rotation, but also the fact that the discount rate on cash flows far into the future was taking was higher. And if you look at that slide too, we have you can see the very big range that we're seeing in the NASDAQ 100 over only 2 days. I mean, it's hard to really talk about markets being efficient when you have, I mean, even if you take the range over the past week, I mean, it is a little bit of ridiculous to see equity markets going up and down by 15% like this, because I mean, the future, the long-term future is where the main value is derived from, doesn't really change that much on these things. So but if you look at the if you look at the reaction across some of the sectors, if we jump a little bit to page four, you can see energy, financials, industrials, real estate were some of the key sectors that were really bid yesterday, and technology, communication services was you know, sold off pretty bigly, pretty big, and you can see that in the insert as well. You had the Kimco Realty Corporation, which is a real estate company and a real estate trust company, up significantly on the day, together with Carnival, which is one of the biggest cruise operators in the world, and on the opposite part of that trade, you had companies like Etsy, but also Zoom Video and PayPal declining a lot. So it's basically just a reversal of a lot of the things. I think if you zoom out a little bit, I think that the lesson from COVID-19 is still that a lot of companies need to have more sales channels and still be more digital than physical to be able to deal with other crises in the future. And it just, I think there's also have been realized in these companies that you can actually drive down costs by doing more digital sales because you can cut out the middleman, which is basically the retailer. So I think still a lot of long-term trends will be in place. And I actually think that, you know, regardless of what we saw yesterday, you obviously have to update your views, and the views is probably that value stocks will do a little bit better than growth stocks in the coming coming days. But I think we need more evidence before we can really call that a big rotation will take place. I mean, this is just, you know, Bayesian statistics. You update your view with new information, but you really need to see more data points.
And I would argue as well, there's so much algo driven trading out there, and I think there's been plenty of algo shenanigans. If this market moves this much, then that market moves that much, and trying to arbitrage those different trades. And as I haven't read the article, but there was a John Author's comment out this morning about it was like the quant stepped on a garden rake, you know, one of those cartoon things where you step on the end and it smacks you in the forehead. But I think this kind of news jolt, it just messes up all the algorithms, and everything just has to offset, and you get some odd moves across various sectors.
But John, I do think adding a little bit to your introduction, I do also think that we need to really praise Pfizer and the German biotech company that was part of this. I mean, I don't think we can underscore how big a technological feat it was to actually develop a vaccine against a new novel coronavirus in only 10 months. And I think it's actually interesting that in February, the head scientist of the German biotech company, he actually did an op-ed piece in Financial Times where he said he felt pretty confident at that time, given the information he was looking at, that they could deliver a vaccine before the year end. And they actually did. And also, it's a big gratitude to the German company government, because it was not US government money that was involved in this research. It was actually a lot of funding came from the German side of this vaccine. I think that's some of the information that needs to be put out there as well.
Cool. Interesting points there. Another thing that was interesting in the reaction function, certainly one of the biggest reactions relative to recent trading ranges, was gold yesterday, which suffered as much as $100 drop plus at one point yesterday. Ole, you were a little bit uncomfortable with the scale of the recent rally, at least from the sort of real interest rate perspective. You discussed that in yesterday's podcast. But what's the argument here for, I mean, you know, suddenly these safe havens have just gotten destroyed, whether it's the Swiss franc, whether it's gold, whether it's the yen. A massive adjustment yesterday. Take us through what you think the market is digesting, or why it's digesting the move this way.
Yeah, clearly the reaction in gold yesterday was similar to some of the other safe haven market reactions. Basically, that it's happy days. All the virus is behind us, and we can look ahead. No need for gold because the real economy is going to come bouncing back. But I think that's really is actually the key reason why I think gold is still it hasn't really changed the gold narrative, because as I wrote in my update yesterday, the vaccine can kill the COVID, but it can't kill the mountain of debt that has been accumulated during the past 6 to 9 months, and that it still needs to be serviced. And and with that in mind, I think there's actually now, if we do see the vaccine actually starting to have an impact in a relatively short period of time, there is obviously a risk that we could see a policy mistake being made by governments and central banks who have been pumping liquidity into the system, thereby raising the risk of of inflation, and also the potential for the dollar to weaken. So I think this just highlights gold's ability to shock and to do the opposite what is expected, coming at a time where it had just broken higher above 1930. So now we're kind of back to square one. We haven't really broken anything significantly, even managed to hold above the September low. So I think that's pretty key, 1850. Below that, we got the 38.2% retracement of the whole rally from March to August, coming at 1836. That's another key level of support. But we are bouncing today, and I think that's rightfully so. You mentioned real yields, and that will still be a key for going forward. And right now, real yields are coming, are rallying. I'll put that on the small insert there on slide 7. And you can just see how these two, the gold and real yields, no matter what almost kind of you throw at the market, these two are locked together for now at least. And that basically means if we do start to see inflation expectation move up, then real yields potentially can move down again, and that will be the trigger for a renewed rally.
It seems to me like the oil market took this news a little bit more sort of as being quite significant and held a lot of that move that we saw yesterday. Obviously, an enormous move in the oil price. Is it only the COVID story driving or this vaccine story driving that price reaction?
Absolutely, John, and it's the COVID story that's that led to the rally, but it's also the COVID story that's already taken the sting out of the wind out of the bull market sail here. Because as we continue to reiterate, when it comes to physical commodities, which is they require supply and demand to balance on a daily basis. Stock markets can look ahead to the other side of the cliff towards a better time, but commodities they are spot products. And right now, COVID-19 cases are still surging. We saw a new record number in the U.S. yesterday. The short-term outlook for fuel demand is still troubling, and the vaccine, even though it will eventually have an impact, it's just simply not going to happen anytime soon. So we had a relief rally in oil. Also, the market was there was quite a big build up in negative positionings just before the U.S. election, with the COVID surge being the theme. So that's obviously a lot of these shorts were stopped out yesterday, and that's probably what gave the rally some additional fuel. But 43.50, the high from October, once again held in Brent, and I really see this market just trading sideways for now. Focus later this week on oil markets reports, starting to actually today with the IEA in the US, followed by OPEC tomorrow and IEA on Thursday. And I put a small insert there on page 8, just giving the scale of the gap that they are we're seeing for between demand and supply so far this year. And then we really need to see oil demand recover, and that's not going to happen anytime soon, even though we may get the vaccine.
Yeah, and on that note, you have to me it's a bit surprising the forward curve for oil. So you're looking at a, let's call it West Texas Intermediate, just above $40, and the end of 21 it's still south of $43. It seems like if the long-term crude trader might look out the curve into 21, late 21, mid 22 for a strategic play on that oil prices could recover, betting that if there is a vaccine rollout next year, you're going to see a very different demand environment, at least in that time frame. Now, that's just some spur of the moment thoughts. I don't know what you would say to that.
Well, I think what we're seeing further out the curve is basically also hedging activity from U.S. producers, because at 40 plus, some of these guys they do have enough room to make money, and that's also to a certain extent keeping the 21 to 22 curve somewhat under not under pressure, but at least keeping it at these relatively low levels. But we just saw even after yesterday's news, Goldman Sachs overnight came out with an update. They downgraded their Q1 21 Brent forecast by $4 from 51 to 47. Still seeing the COVID as a bump on the road, but the bump just seems to be dragging on and becoming bigger, and that basically means they are not the full recovery is really not a until 22 we can start to look at that.
Okay, now talking about these reactions yesterday, I think we need to at least talk a little bit about Europe, Peter. I mean, we saw some incredible moves in European bourses yesterday, especially stock markets that were so moribund, like Spain. I mean, the IBEX was trading well south of 6,500 a little over a week ago. It's set almost 7,500 this morning. Obviously, this is any signs of relief coming, especially if we get this timescale or this vaccine showing success on a reasonable timescale here, has to be an especially big boost to Europe, where I think you've argued before the valuations look far, far more attractive anyway.
Yeah, so valuations are extremely cheap in Europe, but they're cheap for a reason, and that is because the quality of a lot of the European companies are not as high as you see in the upper part of the US equity market, where you have a lot of high quality companies. But yeah, as you say, on the ground, in terms of the economic activity, I think Europe is definitely the one that the continent that is benefiting the most from a vaccine. It's some areas of Europe are very densely populated. That's really fuel for a pandemic, especially the type of this virus. So that's what you see. And then, as we're talking about in a lot of internal meetings, I think Europe will get some more help and tailwind from China very soon, because China is really operating under a very constrained financial framework right now, or monetary framework. And it is our view that China over the coming 3 to 6 months will begin easing a lot, and that's already on top of a very, solid rebound, as China has been very successful in containing its outbreak of COVID-19, and that will help Europe because it mean China is Europe's biggest trading partner and benefits enormously from impulses from Asia. So I think actually we might have turned a corner here for Europe, and at least in the short term, I think just the initial optimism and hope of a vaccine could change people's behavior and actually increase consumption. I mean, it's I think sentiment and the narratives are very sensitive to these
Yeah.
news and optimisms.
I agree. And taking us through the dollar reaction. So we saw the dollar a little bit different depending where you're looking. So against pro-cyclical currencies, those held up well, things like the Aussie and the Kiwi. Obviously, this would be great news for the global, the global growth outlook, and those currencies tend to do well on that. But if you look at dollar yen, as I show on slide 6, you saw quite the opposite reaction. I think that's driven by the 30-year or the long yield in the US, just ripping back higher, close to the cycle highs we've seen since COVID, and I think one of the most interesting market reactions out there. Higher US yields are not too good news for yen traders, and you're seeing that reflected in the chart. So dollar weaker, and then safe havens like the yen and the Swiss franc also a lot weaker. What does this do for the US outlook? It really changes the odds here, as you mentioned, Peter, on the behavior side. A lot of that stimulus cash was saved by US savers. If there's a clear roadmap to end of lockdowns, end of COVID-19, there's $2 trillion that could hit the hit the ground running in terms of consumption, reopening of restaurants, travel, who knows what. A lot of consumption in the US, it drives worse current account deficit, that is currency negative. You have the Fed promising to do the average inflation targeting. That's keeping the dollar lower because it's going to be very slow to react to an uptick in inflation. As well, you won't need as much treasury issuance because presumably you won't need as much fiscal stimulus. And the treasury has a big stockpile of money ready to go anyway. And as it spends that money, that's more dollar liquidity. So I think you just got it quite a cocktail for a solid dollar bear story, assuming we get this vaccine news coming in. And I think that is the key hurdle. First of all, no safety problems with this. Maybe by the end of this month, we'll know that. And then signs that are actually rolling out this thing and the millions of doses as December progresses. I think that would be the key hurdle here. Let's see, guys. Let's go to the calendar, unless you wanted to bring up anything else. A number of interesting items out there. I really think it's about digesting this reaction, and current on-the-ground activity is going to be far less interesting than anticipation out the curve, again, given the slow drumbeat as it comes in of vaccine news. That'll be the most important thing here. And finally, actually on the reaction front, we need to look at the UK. Just a tremendous rally, not only in equities there, but sterling also pushing stronger despite really no news on the Brexit front. We need to see something this week, so we'll be watching headlines for that. Finally, on the calendar, you can look at it on slide 9. Just want to pull out the RBNZ. Interesting meeting here because the expectations that were sort of been building in recent weeks into this meeting. This is the most dovish of all central banks. They're prepping for negative rates. They're about to do a funding for lending program, maximum support. How does that fit with the sudden change in the mood, potential for a vaccine, et cetera? Maybe they want to downplay their commitment to negative rates, or at least extend the timeline potential, just to give us a little bit more time. Any sort of pushing away or pulling away from that hyper dovish commitment could be quite interesting tonight from the RBNZ and trigger a Kiwi rally, I would guess, especially against the Aussie, but just broadly speaking as well. They'll not like that too much if it's too much of a rally, but and maybe react to that down the road. But still, an interesting setup going into that RBNZ meeting tonight. For now, I think we'll call it a day. It'll be interesting to see how markets continue to digest this news. And we'll have our latest update, of course, tomorrow with the next Saxo market call. For today, thanks for joining.